Hello there, it's Ryan from The Thing You're Currently Watching. I'm taking the week off to spend the holidays with my family and my new daughter, pictured here with no Photoshop, so I thought it might be fun to present to you my favorite pitch meetings I made in 2024. Thank you so much for watching this year, and I hope you enjoy watching these pitch meetings as well as the 30-pound weight fluctuation I underwent in the past 12 months.
So, you have a new YA movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do.
Amazing, because we're almost out of Hunger Games movies, and I'm terrified.
Well, I've got you covered, sir. This is based on a book series called Divergent.
Does it have dystopian teens in it?
It does.
So we're gonna follow the main character, Triss, and she's not like the other girls.
Oh, can you tell me more?
Nope. Perfect. And this is gonna take place in a dystopian, futuristic Chicago where everybody's divided into five factions.
What do you mean?
Well, you've got Erudite, who are smart, Candor, who are honest, Amity, who are peaceful, Abnegation, who are selfless and run everything.
And what's the fifth?
They're called Dauntless, and they run around and climb things and go woohoo!
Oh, that sounds like the fun, crazy one.
Yeah, it is, and they're also the police.
What?
So anyway, when kids are 16, they get this serum-induced test that tells you what faction you should join during this choosing ceremony.
Okay.
But when Triss does it, the lady doing the test is like, you have equal attributes in all factions. That's dangerous for you.
It is.
Yeah, because it means they're harder to control or something, so the lady fakes her results to be Abnegation and sneaks her out the back door.
If she changed the results, why sneak her out the back? Isn't that more suspicious?
Hey, shut up. So then at the choosing ceremony, Triss decides to become Dauntless.
Why even bother with the testing if you're just gonna let people choose whatever?
Listen, sir, I'm gonna need you to get all the way off my back about how the testing works, okay? That's just how it is.
Oh, okay, let me get off of that thing.
So now that she chose Dauntless, she immediately has to leave her family forever and start running around and screaming woo and climbing stuff.
Wow, just getting right into it.
Yeah, she's gonna meet one of the older guys doing the training. This guy, Four.
For what?
Training.
Training for...
No, Four is doing the training.
Who is?
Four is.
Who's Four?
The trainer.
The trainer's 4 years old?
No, Four is 24.
No, 24 is 24.
Mathematically, yes, but the trainer's Four.
And what's his name?
Four?
I just want to know.
His name is Four. Four is his name.
Oh, okay.
That went pretty well. Anyway, Four and Triss are eventually gonna fall in love.
Wait, isn't Triss 16?
Yes.
So that's, like, kinda wrong.
Well, in the book, he was, like, 18, but I kicked that up to 24.
So that's, like, kinda wrong.
Not in this fictional world. It's not...
Why'd you write this?
Anyway, now she has to do Dauntless trainings, and the trainers are really mean to the new recruits.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, especially this one guy. He's a real jerk.
And what's his little evil dystopian name?
Oh, you're gonna like this. Eric?
Very evil.
And so they're actually getting ranked during this whole thing, and the lowest ranked people get kicked out.
Oh.
Yeah, and that means they become factionless, which means homeless, but in a future-y way.
Gross.
So as part of the training, she gets knocked unconscious twice, so obviously she's not doing great.
She gets knocked unconscious?
Yeah, the second time for like a full day.
She has brain damage for sure.
No, she gets up and sprints and catches up to a moving train.
So getting knocked out for a full day is just fine in this world?
Apparently so. So then they do this capture the flag game, and Triss is the only one who thinks about climbing up high to get a good vantage point.
He said climbing was like one of the two things they do besides screaming woo.
Yeah, so then she wins the game for her team and goes up in the rankings a bit.
Oh, wow, wow, wow. Wow.
So now the next part of the training's going into serum-induced nightmares and getting out of sticky situations.
Very exciting, except clearly not real, so immediately less exciting.
Yeah, but then Four is gonna see that she's solving problems divergently.
Busted.
And so since he likes her, he's gonna bring her into his fear landscape to help her train.
Bringing people into your fear landscape is tight.
That's what I call my basement. Cool, okay, and then we're also gonna find out that Four calls himself Four because he has four fears.
So if he sees a ghost and gets spooked, he's gotta change his name to Five?
Yes, and we also find out that Erudite plans to overthrow Abnegation as the government people.
Oh, how do they plan on doing that?
Well, after the final testing, all the Dauntless are gonna get brainwashed and programmed to go attack Abnegation.
If they're planning on mind-controlling them, why eliminate some of them? Doesn't that just hurt their numbers?
Unclear, but the serum doesn't affect Triss because she's divergent, and she finds out that Four is as well.
Oh.
Yeah, so they need to act brainwashed while all the other Dauntless are killing Abnegation folks, but then they get busted by Eric.
Frickin' Eric!
So Four gets taken away, and Triss gets brought to the back to get executed.
If they're just killing people out of the open, why did they bring her to the back?
Oh, she's the main character.
That makes sense.
But then Triss's mom pops out and saves her, and she's like, haha, surprise, I actually used to be Dauntless. I was interesting.
Oh, now it's getting interesting. What's her deal?
So then she dies.
Oh, okay.
And then Triss reunites with their dead, and he's like, guess what? I'm secretly cool, too.
Oh.
So he dies.
Right, okay.
And so Triss goes to rescue Four, but he's being controlled by another serum, and he's being programmed to kill her.
Uh-oh, well, it's gonna be impossible. impossible to stop him now.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because she's gonna tell him that she loves him, and that's gonna break the curse.
I thought it was a serum.
I don't care.
So to save the day, does she have to tell all the other kids she loves them too?
No. See, they're all being controlled by a computer that's being controlled by this big old boss evil lady.
Oh, what's her evil dystopian name?
Get a load of this, Sir Janine.
Whoa!
So to stop Janine, they actually inject her with the mind control serum and tell her to stop the machine, and she has to obey them because of the serum.
But you just said orders are given through a computer.
Yes.
But they just do it to her verbally.
They do, yeah. So then the mind control's broken because it worked. It works in different ways.
Well, great. So do they kill Janine?
No. That would be a little much.
Oh, do the main characters not kill or something?
Oh, no, they kill a lot of people, but mostly just extras because they don't really matter.
That makes sense. They don't.
So then the good guys jump onto a train that's somehow always running and ride it into the sequel.
Very exciting.
And so that's about it. What do you think?
Well, I mean, we're doing the Hunger Games recipe and people like the Hunger Games. I don't see how this can fail.
So, you have a movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's called Love Actually.
Well, don't correct me. I didn't even try to guess the title.
No, Love Actually is the name of it.
Yeah, no, I understand. Okay, tell me about this love movie.
You'll figure it out when you see the poster. So this is a movie that takes place in London in the month leading up to Christmas, right?
Okay.
And it's a bunch of love-related storylines that are ever so slightly intertwined.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, because or else this would just be a bunch of short films.
Nobody wants to see that.
Exactly. So once in a while, it's gonna be like, oh, I guess those two work together.
Neat. So tell me about these storylines.
Well, one of them follows the new Prime Minister, David.
Right.
And as soon as he walks in on his first day, he meets this junior staff member, Natalie, and he's like, oh, well, that's inconvenient. I could really see myself sleeping with her. That's happened to me at every job I've had in this industry. So one day, the U.S. President visits, and David lets him walk all over him, but then he sees him getting handsy with Natalie, so he publicly humiliates him in front of the entire world.
He risks the well-being of his nation because he got jealous over a girl?
Yeah, he's a hero now. And another storyline follows his sister, Karen.
Okay.
And her husband, who I was thinking we get Alan Rickman to play, he's allowing himself to get seduced by his new secretary at the office, where he's the big boss.
So is this movie just powerful men wanting to sleep with their employees?
Only like a third of the storylines.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Anyway, another storyline's about another one of Alan Rickman's female employees.
Is he trying to hook up with her too?
No, not this one.
Okay, gotcha.
He just brings her into his office and is like, hey, everybody knows about the crush you have on another employee, so you should go sleep with him ASAP.
Inappropriate Snapes are tight.
Yeah, this office doesn't have an HR department or something. So she's about to do that, but then they get interrupted by phone calls from her mentally ill brother, who she takes care of, so it doesn't work out and they do not do it.
Bummer.
No, he does not get to.
What?
So she kind of accepts, well, I guess I'll never find romantic love because I choose to take care of my brother.
Wow, and so how does her story end?
It just did.
Oh.
But then earlier in the movie, she was a guest at this wedding, which involves another one of our storylines.
And what's that one about?
Well, there's this guy, Mark, right? And there's his best friend, Peter, who's gonna marry this girl, Juliet.
Okay.
And when we meet them, they're talking about how Mark hired a bunch of prostitutes for the bachelor party who turned out to be men.
He did what now?
And then he freaking surprises them by having a bunch of musicians pop out at their wedding. I mean, the robes are just filled with musicians.
Wait, was anyone actually attending that wedding?
Unclear. But so then one day, Juliet comes over because she wants to see the wedding video he was shooting, but he doesn't want her to see it.
Why not?
Well, turns out it was all just close-up shots of her that he filmed for himself. Because he likes her.
What was he gonna do with that in his video collection?
Gross and weird stuff, presumably. So he's so embarrassed, he walks around town, does one of those embarrassment squats.
I don't think that's a thing.
But it might be. So when he's done squatting out his bad feelings, he builds up the courage to go to her house and confess his love.
Does she not live with her husband, his best friend?
No, she does, but he thought of this clever thing where when she opens the door, he's got this confession written out on big pieces of cardboard, and he plays some music so she can tell her husband it's carol singers.
But what if the husband had been the one to open the door?
Hey, shut up. So after he confesses his love, he starts to walk away, but she catches up with him and gives him a big old kiss.
She does?
Yeah, so that just goes to show, you know. Infidelity can be kind of nice sometimes.
What are you talking about?
And speaking of infidelity, this guy Jamie, his girl cheated on him while he was at that same wedding.
In a
nice way?
No, this one was in a bad way. So he goes to stay at this French cottage, and he falls in love with his Portuguese housekeeper, Aurelia.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like all these characters are really turned on by the employer-employee dynamic.
And they can't communicate because they don't speak the same language. But we see with the subtitles that they're kind of saying the same thing. They got a lot in common.
All right.
And when he gets back from his trip, he decides to learn kind of passable Portuguese before Christmas.
He's gonna learn a language in like a week?
Sure is. And then he flies back to see her, and turns out she did kind of the same thing with English. So then he proposes to her in front of everybody.
He proposes?
Yeah, so now they're gonna get married, and she's gonna move to London and leave her family behind.
They haven't even had a conversation yet. Maybe start with a coffee?
No, it's proposal right away, coffee and first conversation later.
Wasn't he in a serious relationship like 3 weeks earlier? That's kind of a red flag.
Red's the color of love and Christmas.
Ah, can't argue with that.
Then there's this other guy, Colin, and he was a waiter at that wedding, and his whole thing is he wants to go to America to get laid.
And this is a Christmas movie.
Yeah, I mean, what says Christmas spirit like trying to go bang American women?
Arguably anything else.
So he goes to Wisconsin, and immediately multiple beautiful women want to sleep with him because he's British.
Did the Wisconsin Tourism Board bribe you or something?
A little bit.
Well, okay then. I foresee lots of British guys going on pretty disappointing trips to Wisconsin in the future.
For sure. And then Colin has a friend who works on a movie set.
Oh my god, how many storylines are there?
So many. Just so many.
All right.
So on this movie set, there are two body doubles, and they're kind of shy, but they're gonna fall in love.
Oh, that's sweet.
While pretending to rub their junk on each other over and over again.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I thought it might be fun to include some stuff that makes this movie kind of weird to watch with your parents.
Yeah, sure, why not?
And then there is this guy who is somehow friends with the Prime Minister's sister who is being cheated on by her husband, and his wife dies, and he's now in charge of his stepson.
What?
It's all connected, baby.
Yeah, kinda.
And this kid's in love with a girl at school, so he decides he needs to play the drums at this big Christmas show they have going on.
Wouldn't they have already chosen a drummer for that a couple of weeks before Christmas?
Apparently not, so now he's gotta learn to play the drums.
He doesn't know how to play?
No, so then he learns and nails the show.
These British people are fast learners.
And the Prime Minister's secretary's younger brother is also in this show.
I'm gonna need you to make me a chart or something.
And that's gonna lead to this funny moment where the curtain rises and you just see the Prime Minister making out with his secretary.
Yikes.
What?
Well, it's gonna be tough for him to navigate that scandal.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, see, because it's Christmas, everybody just claps, and so that's settled.
Oh, okay, nice.
But then that kid's love interest is moving to America.
What, immediately after the Christmas Eve show?
Yes, she's headed from the show to the airport and to America forever.
What?
So this kid's gotta chase her down and do a bunch of gymnastics at the airport and confess his love.
Gymnastics?
You can cut that part out if you like.
Wow, so this kid must be in massive trouble.
None whatsoever.
Airport security's notoriously hardcore, especially now.
Why, what happened?
So that's it, right? Like, that's all the stories?
That's it, sir. Well, no, there's also an aging rock star named Billy Mack who puts out a terrible Christmas album and then leans into how bad it is to end up having the number one Christmas song in Britain.
Okay.
And so he gets invited to a big party at Elton John's house, but then he leaves the party to go hang with his manager, who he loves.
Well, that's kind of nice. He couldn't have just gotten his manager an invite to the party.
No, they're gonna stay at the manager's place and watch pornography.
Oh my god. Okay, that's it? That's all the stories?
It is. So then we wrap it all up with a scene where everybody's at the airport.
What do you mean?
Well, you got some characters arriving, some characters leaving, the Prime Minister's there.
Flying commercial?
Yes, and so then we're done. What do you think?
Well, it sounds like a pretty good time. Just out of curiosity, who are you thinking for that Juliet character?
The one who gets married and then her husband's best friend kind of stalks her a little bit. I was thinking this up-and-coming actress, Keira Knightley.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, she's great. She's 17. Is that cool?
Nothing weird or wrong about that.
So, you have a new Ghostbusters for me?
Yes, sir, I do.
So this takes place 5 years after the original. The Ghostbusters are out of business and people don't believe in ghosts anymore.
But a bunch of ghosts attacked the city and there was a giant marshmallow man.
5 years is a long time, sir. People forget stuff.
But that?
Well, sir, the thing is, yes.
Well, okay then.
So they all have various new jobs. Egon runs experiments on children.
What?
Ray and Winston, they go to children's homes together.
What?
And Venkman hosts a TV show where he lets two people talk for less than a minute each. And then he
ends the show.
He hosts a 2-minute TV show?
Apparently so, sir.
So one day Dana is out with her new baby, and after she rolls into some pink slime, the carriage gets possessed.
Oh, is Zool after her again?
No, totally different ghost thing. She just happens to roll in some haunted pink slime.
Okay.
And she also works in the museum where the haunted portrait of this movie's bad guy Vigo is.
She just coincidentally lives in the haunted apartment in the first movie and works with the haunted painting in this one.
That's what we're going with.
And she rolls in the pink slime.
A very unlucky lady, paranormally speaking.
Yeah, so because of the crazy stroller thing, she contacts the Ghostbusters to help.
Oh, again?
Well, people like the first movie, sir, so I figure we do it again beat for beat, but slightly different.
That works for me.
So the Ghostbusters start excavating the street where the stroller got possessed, and when the cops try to stop them, they pretend to be construction workers.
Weren't the Ghostbusters national celebrities? How don't they get recognized?
People forgot.
Oh, that's right.
So then underground, Ray discovers a river of pink slime and accidentally breaks a thing that cuts out power to the city.
Oh, whoops.
Whoopsie. So now the Ghostbusters have to go on trial because of all the damage, and nobody believes them about the pink slime.
Wouldn't workers need to go down to the pink slime area to fix the thing they broke?
Hey, shut up. And this judge is like, I don't believe in ghosts. You guys are liars.
Well,
he forgot. But then some pink slime starts reacting, and these two scary ghosts pop out, and they look like scary cartoon characters. They don't even look human.
Very scary.
Yeah, and the judge is like, oh no, that's the Scolari brothers. Those guys hate me because I sentenced them to death.
How does he recognize them if they don't look human?
Unclear.
So then the Ghostbusters save the day, and suddenly everyone believes in ghosts again, and they're back in business.
So they go back to the River of Slime, check it out?
No, they just do some odd ghost jobs for a while, make another couple of commercials.
Oh, okay.
And meanwhile, the painting of Vigo has possessed Dana's boss and commands him to find a baby.
Why does he want a baby?
So that he can take a physical form again. He'd be raised by Dana and her boss.
So he'd be like super weak and tiny and need to have his diaper changed?
Yeah, pretty scary, right?
I guess.
Anyway, so then the Ghostbusters do check out the slime, but they get pulled into it.
Uh-oh.
And they come out of the sewer yelling at each other, and they're like, hey, this slime's negative energy is influencing us. There's no way we would be upset after almost drowning in the sewer.
That's a logical conclusion to come to, sure.
So they go tell Venkman about this.
He didn't go with them? Is he not one of the Ghostbusters?
Well, he is, but when he's on screen, it's gonna be more of the Dana thing. You know, the will they, won't they have, but will they again story.
You know, I am less interested in the ghosts and more so in the rekindling.
Also, Lewis Tully and Janine spend like the whole movie hooking up.
What?
So then the Ghostbusters go to tell the mayor about the slime, but the mayor's assistant has them immediately committed to a psychiatric hospital, which is a thing you can do when you're the mayor's assistant.
Why does he do that?
Because in the first film, we had a government person being a jerk and getting them locked up, so we're doing that again, but slightly different.
That makes sense.
And meanwhile, the painting turns Dana's boss into a ghost, which is a thing he can do, and has him kidnap the baby from the side of a building.
This painting guy seems really powerful as is. I don't know if he needs to become a baby.
Well, he does, and so the baby gets brought to the museum, which gets covered in slime, and so do the streets.
Oh, filling the streets with slime is tight.
Okay.
And so now there are ghosts everywhere.
So does the slime make people angry or summon ghosts?
Yes.
I don't get it.
So then the mayor releases the Ghostbusters because they gotta do something about this.
Well, it's gonna be tough to do anything about vaguely powerful, spooky slime.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, see, they figure out that since the slime reacts to the negativity of New Yorkers, they need to get the Statue of Liberty to make everybody happy.
Get the statue? How do they even get to the statue?
With the power of cutting directly to them being there.
Okay, that does usually work, but how do they get the statue?
Well, they spray it with slime that they've infused with positive energy, and that lets them control it and walk it down the streets of Manhattan.
How could they have known that was even a possibility?
By believing.
What do you mean?
Oh, I don't know. They just know.
Oh, okay.
So then they're able to smash their way into the museum and fight the bad guy.
Oh, boy.
And then everybody in the street, they start singing, and their positivity helps defeat the bad guy.
Hell yeah, I love weaponizing positivity.
So then the bad guy disappears, and the painting is replaced by one of the Ghostbusters.
Why?
Because that's the mysteries of the paranormal. I don't care.
Fair enough.
And so that's about it. What do you think?
Well, it sounds like a movie.
It is.
And this story, this is what all the stars want to do?
This bad boy is exactly what they all want to do.
So, you got some new Star Wars content for me?
Yes, sir, I do. And in this one, we're going to be following OSHA.
Amazing. Occupational safety is very important.
Right, but also that's her name, and she's going to be falsely accused of a crime.
What's the crime?
Well, her sister May is going to have this big old fight against a Jedi named Indara, who I figure we could get Carrie Ann Moss to play.
Trinity? Oh boy, that'll be a big draw for the show. So what does she do?
Ah, die immediately.
Okay, well, I'm still going to pretend like she's a main character when we promote the show.
Sounds like a good idea.
So since May and Osha look exactly alike and everybody thinks May is dead, Osha gets blamed.
Was she nearby?
Not even a little bit. She was off putting out space fires, but a bartender saw her, so...
Space fires?
Fires in space, that's right. So she gets arrested and put on a prisoner ship piloted by robots.
They think she killed a Jedi, so they put her on an unmanned ship?
That's what we're going with. So this ship ends up crashing, and then she reunites with her old Jedi Master Soul.
Okay.
And she explains to him, like, hey, I think my sister might be alive, but he's like, no, I watched her die.
Yeah, sounds like there's some history between these two.
Oh, there sure is, sir. That's the whole basis of the show, but to explain that, we're gonna have to go back 16 years.
I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, no, don't worry. I'll just tell you what happened.
Okay, yeah, that's better for me.
So Osha and May were raised by a bunch of space witches, and May wants to become a space witch, but Osha doesn't really wanna.
There are career paths other than space witch, sure.
So then they're having this big ceremony to become space witches, and they do this little chant.
A chant?
Yeah, they're like, the power of one, the power of two, the power of many. So anyway, then Soul and some other Jedi show up, and they maybe want to train these kids to become Jedi, because they have a high M count.
M count? You mean midichlorians?
Well, yes, but people made fun of that, so now I'm scared to say it out loud.
Fair enough.
So they do some tests on these girls, but then this Padawan really wants to go home, so he rushes back to the temple confrontationally.
That's his motivation? He wants to leave?
ASAP. He doesn't like the food he's currently eating, so he risks and ruins everything.
Understandable, I guess. So what happens?
Well, the Mother Witch turns into a big scary smoke monster, so Soul kills her with a lightsaber.
Close one.
Actually, no, he shouldn't have, because she's like, I was gonna let Osha go become a Jedi.
She probably shouldn't have changed into a scary monster then.
Yeah, well, if there's no miscommunication in this show, then there is no show.
Oh, interesting storytelling technique.
So then all the witches get together and possess this Wookiee Jedi, but when Trinity breaks that possession, all the witches die.
Why?
Because I need all the witches to die.
That works.
And also, May is mad that Osha didn't want to become a space witch, so she starts a little fire and locks all the doors.
Sounds like an OSHA violation for sure.
Yeah, and this place is made of stone, so the fire spreads quickly.
What?
And then Soul finds himself in this situation where each sister is standing on a collapsing platform, and his force lift isn't strong enough for both platforms, so he just saves OSHA.
Why not force lift the girls instead of the platforms they're on?
Hey, shut up, and so that crazy night sets the stage for this whole story.
Wow, well that's gonna be a pretty intense show intro for sure.
Oh no, what I just described is a mystery spread out over multiple episodes.
Stretching things out is tight.
Paradoxically, yes. So then what happens?
Well, because of that night, 16 years later, May is killing the Jedi involved with that, and she's working with this guy, Chimer.
Okay.
And also, there seems to be a Sith lurking around, but we don't know who he is.
Is it Chimer? I mean, who else would it be?
Yep, that's a good point. I'm still gonna drop it as a big reveal several episodes in, okay?
Sure, sounds good.
So this guy really wants May to kill a Jedi without using a weapon.
How come?
He thinks that would be a pretty cool little dark side challenge.
That does sound pretty cool.
Then one day he goes nuts and kills practically all the Jedi that Osha was rolling with.
Oh my god.
And in all that chaos, Osha and May switch places.
Oh, they do.
Yeah, and it looks like May is gonna stab Soul, but then she doesn't.
Why not?
Yeah, because she doesn't want it anymore, you know? Who's to say why characters do what they do?
You.
Can you imagine? That'd be nuts.
Well,
anyway, meanwhile, Osha is hanging out with Chimer the Sith.
Hanging out?
Yeah, she follows him around. He takes his clothes off, shows her his Sarlacc pit.
Oh my god.
So now that he murdered all her friends and flashed her his space junk, she's kind of into what he has to say about the dark side.
Okay.
But then she puts on his cool helmet and gets a vision of where May is.
Oh, she does?
Yeah, because the season's almost over and I need them to reunite, so she just has a vision of where to go next.
Nice. So all the characters end up on that witchy planet where this whole thing started.
It's like poetry, it rhymes.
It's like poetry, it rhymes, that's right.
So there's gonna be a big showdown between Chimer and Soul, and then also between May and Osha.
Very exciting.
And then Osha's gonna find out that Soul killed their mom, so she wants to kill him.
Well, it's gonna be tough for her to kill an experienced Jedi Master.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because now that she's angry, she can do dark side stuff, so she force chokes him to death.
So he doesn't explain that her mom had turned into a scary smoke monster?
No, because proper communication would get in the way of the story I'm trying to tell.
Right, okay, keep going. So there's no Soul.
Nope.
And then also that guy died.
What?
So then what happens?
Well, then Osha agrees to train with Chimer and let him show her the dark side.
Oh, he flashes her again?
No, like the dark side of the Force.
Oh, okay.
And then he wipes May's memory, which is a thing he can do.
Why?
So she can't remember. But, and then a green lady blames everything on Soul, and we're done. So what do you think?
Mm, It's okay. I just feel like it's missing something.
It is, isn't it? What key ingredient we missing here?
Oh, I got it. You know what it is? We got to do that thing. You know that thing where we sprinkle in glimpses of established characters and selectively recycle content we own as if that were a way to sustain long-term engagement?
Right, that's what it is. I'll toss a few cameos in at the end.
Great, that'll keep the brand alive.
So, you have a movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. You know it, sir.
Amazing.
No, I mean, you know it, sir. This movie's mostly comprised of scenes from popular movies you're definitely familiar with.
Oh, well, if those movies are popular, that should translate into this one being popular as well.
If my calculations are correct, that's exactly right.
Sick.
So we're gonna start the movie with some big old lady space parts.
What was that?
And a big ship flies through the lady parts.
Traveling through space privates is tight.
And there are some bad guys heading to this moon called Velt, where the main character, Korra, is doing some slow-mo farming.
The farming is slow-mo?
Yeah, everything's slow-mo, sir. That's the secret to making movies feature-length.
What about, like, story or character development?
No, it's the slow-mo. That's how you get the runtime.
Oh, good to know.
So anyway, this big bad guy, Admiral Noble, goes up to the leader of this farming village and does a slightly altered version of that opening scene from Inglourious Basterds.
Great scene.
Great scene. Yeah, he's got a Nazi uniform and everything.
Why disguise it? It's good as is.
And he says he's gonna force this whole town to grow him a bunch of grain so he can feed his troops.
This big bad guy's doing crop negotiations?
Yeah, okay, and then he leaves a bunch of soldiers behind to oversee this whole thing.
Okay.
But then these soldiers are about to take advantage of this local girl, so Korra reveals she's secretly been a badass this whole time and kills them all.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and there's this robot that was with the bad guys, but he helps her out and he's actually a good robot now and he's got an amazing voice.
Interesting. I want to hear more about this robot.
Well, too bad. He runs away and doesn't return till the end of the movie.
Oh, dang it.
So now the whole town is like, oh, very cool. Korra's good at punching.
Sure sounds that way.
So she's like, well, the only way to stop this bad guy and his giant planet-destroying ship is for me to go recruit a couple of reluctant warriors.
That makes sense.
It does, yeah. So her and this guy Gunner go do an alternate version of the cantina scene from A New Hope.
Great scene.
Great scene. And they meet an alternate version of Han Solo named Kai, who's gonna help them out for money.
Star Wars is a great movie. I'm glad we're doing it again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then what do they do?
Well, this guy takes them on an alternate Millennium Falcon to go recruit their first warrior dude, Tarek.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but he's currently a slave, so the slave owner is like, I tell you what, if he can tame this wild beast, you can have him, but if he can't, I get to keep you as slaves.
Why would they agree to that?
So they agree to that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because see, they were told that this guy is a beast tamer, so they, you know, risk everything on that.
Well, okay then.
So then this guy's gonna do an alternate version of that hippogriff scene from Harry Potter.
Great scene.
Great scene. And then Buckbeak kills the slave owner and they take off.
Very exciting.
So on the next planet, they meet this other warrior, Nemesis, who has an alternate version of lightsabers.
Great weapons.
Great weapons. And so then she kills this big spider lady and they all take off to the next planet.
Wait, did they even ask her to join?
I mean, probably off screen or something. I don't know.
All right.
So then they go recruit the next person.
So just to be sure, this is like a montage you're describing, right?
Oh, no. This is the movie.
Are you sure? Because this just sounds like that one scene in every heist movie where they, like, get the team together.
Yeah, but with slow motion, we will meet our runtime target.
Okay.
So they go see this General Titus guy who is dirty, but then showers and joins them.
So is it gonna be, like, fun banter between all the members of this growing team?
Ah.
No.
Oh.
Yeah, no, once you're on the team, you stand quietly in the background as others are recruited.
Gotcha.
So next they go recruit this guy, Darian Bloodaxe, and he has a sister, and they both run a rebellion or something.
So he joins?
He joins, and he brings a couple of people with him, and now it's time for the final fight.
Wait, do we, like, learn stuff about people?
Oh, yeah, we'll see. At a certain point, Korra's gonna tell her entire story to Gunner. See, it turns out she was, like, raised by the space Nazis, and she was one of their top people, but now she's good. She's not in them, with them anymore.
What inspires her to share that?
Well, she tells him, I am telling you this so that you know my story.
Subtle.
So then that Kai guy is like, hey, you silent people who have each individually displayed one skill have inspired me to become good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but then turns out he's not good, he's bad, and he betrays them and sells them out to the Empire or whatever alternate name I come up with.
Oh no!
So the bad guys trap the good guys in these mechanism things and Kai tells Gunner to paralyze Korra.
What do you mean?
Well, there's like this little gun thing, right? And if you put it in a hole, it
shoots right into the person's neck.
Uh-oh, well, it's gonna be tough for him to get out of that situation if they're all surrounded by bad guys.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy, barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because see, another thing about this mechanism is that if you turn this gun the opposite way, it releases the prisoner, and then you could kind of use it as a weapon, so he frees Korra and kills Kai.
Why would they design that thing that way?
So then one by one, they free all the good guys and get into a big fight.
Are they surrounded by bad guys with guns pointing at them?
Yeah, but see, none of them can aim because they're kind of like alternate stormtroopers, I guess.
Great bad guys.
Great bad guys. And then there's this big old fight and freaking Darien, he dies.
Oh no, Darien! Which one? Who was that?
One of them.
Oh no!
And then Korra gets into a big fight with Noble and manages to kill him.
Well, good for her.
Except the bad guys bring him back to life, so he's gonna be back for part two. Don't you worry about that.
That's a good cliffhanger. Are they gonna be able to defeat this guy they've killed once already?
So then all the good guys go back to that moon, and that robot has antlers now.
Cool. And so that's it for part one. What do you think?
Well, it sounds like some content for sure. I just wonder if there's a way to capitalize on this a bit more.
Well, this is gonna be Zack Snyder, and you know what his fans like.
Snyder cuts.
Yeah, let's purposefully release a non-Snyder cut first.
Very sneaky, I love it. Let's hack this version to bits.
So, you have a movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's called The Shining, and it's based off a Stephen King novel I glanced at.
Oh, what's it about?
That's about making hotel hallways and certain carpet patterns unsettling for generations to come.
Okay, that's weirdly specific, but what about story-wise?
Right, well, it's about this haunted hotel that turns this guy, Jack Torrance, crazy.
And what's his deal?
Well, in the book, he's a nice family man that turns evil, so I figure we save some time by making him be, like, halfway there already.
Smart.
Yeah, he's already a pretty terrifying, recovering, raging alcoholic who's dislocated his son's shoulder in the past and doesn't really seem to like his family.
Yikes, so what are we gonna do with all the saved time?
Excruciatingly long shots that hold for longer than is comfortable and crossfade transitions while people are clearly still talking.
Nice, so tell me about this story.
Right, so Jack gets hired as the winter caretaker for the Overlook Hotel, which is this big hotel in the Colorado Mountains that shuts down each winter.
Sounds like it'd be a great resort for skiing.
That's what Jack says too, but the head of the hotel says it would cost too much to clear the snow off the roads.
So what do people do there in the summer?
They would, be there.
Right.
There's also this big hedge maze that you can't see in aerial shots, but trust me, it's there. It's right there.
I guess that sounds like a fun place to go.
Maybe. It's also built on a Native American burial ground.
That's probably fine.
So during the interview, Jack is informed that one of the former caretakers went nuts during the winter and chopped up his wife and kids with an axe.
Oh, my God.
But Jack doesn't see that as a problem. He's excited to be locked up with his family for 5 months because he's working on a book.
His family that he seemingly doesn't really like.
Exactly, but the thing about his son Danny is that he has The Shining.
That's the name of the book you glanced at!
It is. So that's this telepathic ability that gives him scary visions of the hotel, like little twin girls and an elevator filled with blood.
Wow, well I guess we're gonna find out what that elevator vision's about later, huh?
Not really, no.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, the head chef of the hotel also has The Shining, and I was thinking we get Scatman Crothers to play him.
His name is Scatman? That's kind of peculiar.
Well, his full name is Benjamin Sherman Scatman Crothers, but don't worry, the character's name's a lot less distracting.
What's his character's name?
Dick.
Oh, perfect.
So Dick explains The Shining to Danny, and then he's like, never ever go in room 237.
Nothing wrong with a good old forbidden hotel room, sure.
Oh, that sounded sketchy. So then during the winter, in the midst of the extremely long shots of them sitting or walking or tricycling around the hotel, sometimes spooky stuff is gonna happen.
Yeah, what kind of spooky stuff we talking?
Well, Danny's gonna come across the twin daughters of the old caretaker, and they're gonna be like, come play with us, Danny.
Oh, well, that's nice. He's probably pretty bored by that point.
No, see, they're dead ghost girls.
Right, okay, so that's a no on the plane.
And Jack is gonna start losing his temper with Wendy real quick.
Did he not do that before?
All signs point to this being pretty in character for him.
Sure.
And then frickin' Danny is gonna go inside room 237.
Ignoring Dick is tight.
And then he comes out all traumatized with bruises around his neck and says that an old crazy lady choked him out.
So a ghost lady just choked him out for a little bit and then let him go?
Yeah, just a quick little choke, then she had other stuff to do, I guess.
Fair enough.
So now Jack goes to investigate, but instead he finds a beautiful naked lady in the tub, so he starts kissing her.
Ew.
But then it turns out she's an old woman.
Oh!
Who is dead and rotting.
Oh, I probably should have reacted to that part. Now I have nowhere to go emotionally.
So he gets super scared, because he didn't want to be kissing an old dead lady. He wanted to be kissing a young one.
What?
So Wendy suggests that maybe they should leave the hotel with Danny, and Jack gets super upset.
So what does he do? Act like he always does?
So he goes to the bar in the ballroom, and this ghost bartender named Lloyd freaking gives him a drink, even though there's no alcohol in the hotel.
A little sip of the old spirit.
So then Danny starts vibrating and sending brain messages to Dick in Miami.
What are you talking about?
Well, he uses The Shining to tell him that his dad's gone nuts, so Dick hops on a plane to head over.
A very friendly Dick.
But then the ghost of the old caretaker tells Jack about this and says he needs to correct his family.
Homicidally, I bet.
Homicidally, that's right. And then Wendy finds out what Jack has been typing this whole time, and all it says over and over is all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Oh, well, he should go play with those ghost girls. They seemed up for it.
Well, instead, he's gonna try to kill Wendy, and she's gonna knock him out and drag him into the pantry.
Very exciting.
Very adrenaline pumping. So she goes to bed.
Oh, she does?
Yeah, she's sleepy now, but then Danny's gonna wake her up, because he's yelling, red rum, red rum.
Oh my god, the freaking child's an alcoholic too?
Nah, see, when you write out red rum and look at it backwards in a mirror, that spells murder.
Oh. You could also just spell out murder.
That would probably get the message across faster, yeah, but he's gonna go this backwards route.
Well, okay then.
So then a ghost lets Jack out of the pantry and he starts chopping down the bathroom door with an axe to try and kill his family.
Oh no.
And Danny escapes through the window, but Wendy doesn't fit. And then Jack pokes his head through the door hole and he's like, here's Johnny.
What?
Here's Johnny.
Like how they introduced Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show?
Exactly, yeah.
Oh. It's kind of random.
It's gonna be iconic.
If you say so. So man, it's gonna be tough for her to escape the bathroom unscathed.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because see, right at that moment, they hear Dick arriving, so Jack leaves to go deal with that.
Couldn't he just take a couple of seconds to kill his wife and then go?
Impossible, no. So then Dick starts walking around the hotel, and Jack pops out and kills him.
So he traveled all the way from Miami just to die immediately.
He sure did, sir. And his shining power didn't see the axe coming. So then Wendy starts running around the hotel, seeing all kinds of spooky stuff.
Like what?
The elevator full of blood, for one.
Oh, what is that about?
I told you, I'm not telling. She also sees some spooky skeletons.
Spooky.
She sees a guy in a bear costume with his bear butt out doing bedroom stuff to a guy in a tux.
What?
Spooky.
What was that last thing? So then Jack is gonna chase Danny through a frozen hedge maze, but it's super cold and he gets lost and freezes to death.
Whoops.
Whoopsie. So then Wendy and Danny ride off on the snowcat that Dick rode in on.
Oh, so that was the purpose of his long trip.
To provide a method of transportation and die immediately. That's right.
Oh, wow, wow, wow. Wow.
So what do you think?
Well, it sounds like a spooky time, and I don't know how to feel about that bear thing. So who are you thinking to play Jack Torrance?
Well, I was thinking Jack Nicholson. He's got one of those naturally creepy smiles.
Oh, that's a good idea. If you were born with a creepy smile like Jack Nicholson, you gotta use that in a horror movie.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you have a movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's called Megalopolis.
What kind of dinosaur is that? Is that gonna go up against Megashark?
Actually, Megalopolis is the name of a futuristic utopian city.
Oh, well, the shark's gonna win that fight, no problem.
There's no shark, sir. The movie follows an architect named Caesar Catalina in New Rome.
New Rome, huh? What's that?
That's New York, but sometimes things are ancient Rome-themed.
Gotcha.
So Caesar's discovered this new building material called Megalon that he wants to use to build Megalopolis.
Right.
Also, he can stop time. That's an ability that he has.
Oh, so this is like a superhero movie, kinda.
No, that's a metaphor, you dummy. Or an analogy. Or it's not. Or it's is. It is real.
Does it affect the plot?
Does anything?
Okay. I am confused.
That makes sense. That'll probably happen a lot.
Okay.
So anyway, Caesar has this mistress, and her name is Wow Platinum.
Oh, wow, wow, wow.
Wow.
That's right. Nailed it.
So she actually is gonna end up marrying Crassus, who's Caesar's rich uncle.
Got it. Okay.
And Crassus has a grandson, Clodio, who's Caesar's cousin, and also wants money and power, like Wow Platinum.
Clodio. All right.
And he parties with Julia, who's the daughter of the mayor, Cicero, who's the enemy of Caesar Catalina.
I think I'm following you, but I cannot confidently say so.
This is like the easy to follow stuff right now.
Oh my god.
So anyway, Cicero's daughter, Julia, starts talking to Caesar, but he's not interested at first, because she's a party girl.
Okay.
He freaking tells her he has no interest in talking to people who can't converse about science and literature and politics.
Being the Jaden Smith of your generation is tight.
But she tells him that she saw him freeze time as he was leveling this building, so he's like, ah, so you're able to see my power. That is, the for real, but no, it is, so metaphorically speaking, you can see that I can do that.
Sir?
Nope, sorry.
Sir, I think this is kind of important stuff I'm talking about here.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, no, I agree. It definitely seems like you think that.
Okay, thank you, because we're talking about philosophy here.
Oh, we are? How so?
By having the characters straight up quote philosophers at each other from time to time.
That works. So now it's time for a famous virgin to dance and sing at a wedding.
What?
Yeah, everybody's gonna gather at WoW and Crassus's wedding, and this virgin teenage pop star is gonna perform, and meanwhile, Caesar's going on a bender.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, this freaking Caesar Catalina guy, he's drinking alcohol, mixing that with hard drugs.
This freaking Caesar guy sounds like a Catalina wine mixer.
Exactly, so he's going around like, whoa! And there'll be colors, and that'll go on for some time.
Well, okay then.
But then Clodio arranges for this video of Caesar hooking up with that pop star to play on all the screens in this building.
Oh, sneaky.
Yeah, so Caesar gets arrested, but then we find out that it was a deepfake video, and the girl wasn't even a minor, so it's like, it's all good now.
Oh, so that problem's immediately resolved?
Yes,
sir. We're frequently gonna present problems that are then solved within a couple of minutes. Like, at a certain point, Caesar loses his time powers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and then shortly after, they come back, so that's all good now.
Well, good.
Oh, and a satellite's gonna crash into the city.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that'll be referenced for a few minutes.
Sure, that may as well happen.
It will. And then I was thinking we have this press conference scene, but the person that Caesar's talking to is actually in the theater with the audience.
What?
Just in the room with everybody, talking to the screen for a moment, and then Caesar answers that person. I think we should do that.
Well, that seems like a logistical nightmare.
Yeah. And it won't add much of anything, but...
But what?
Oh, I don't know. I got nothing. I was hoping you would fill in that blank.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I got nothing.
Then Caesar gets shot in the face by a child.
Oh, my God. So he dies?
Nah, he's all right.
Well, it must be hard to survive being shot in the face.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because see, that Megalon stuff that he discovered, that's able... You can rebuild your face with that and your eyeball and your brain and a dog's leg at a certain point.
What is going on?
Don't worry about it.
So that assassination attempt thing is resolved?
Almost immediately. Yeah, now you're getting it.
I don't think that I am.
Anyway, so then WoW Platinum starts hooking up with her nephew Clodio to try to get him to convince his grandfather to give him the company so she could then take the money and give it to Caesar to make Megalopolis.
Sir.
Sorry.
But then WoW and Clodio walk into Crassus's bedroom, and he's got like this little crotch bump going on under his sheets, and he's like, hey, what do you think of this boner I got?
Oh, my God.
But then it wasn't a boner. It was a tiny bow and arrow, and he uses that to kill WoW Platinum and then to shoot Clodio in the buttocks.
Hey, look, I gotta ask, are you okay?
Me?
Yeah, you all good? You doing all right?
Megalopolis.
Okay.
So then Crassus gives the money to Caesar to build Megalopolis, and this place is great. It has these sidewalks that you stand on and they just move like you don't even have to walk, so we're really gonna focus on that.
Those already exist. Those are in every airport.
Hey, shut up. And then he has a little baby with Julia.
Sure, okay.
And now the baby can stop time too, or not. And then we're done. What do you think?
Well, to be honest, it sounds a little unhinged and crazy.
Just so crazy it might work.
No.
So, you have a movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. I was thinking we make a Borderlands movie.
Oh, yeah. Weren't those games super popular like a decade ago? Why make that now?
Well, sir, the best time to make a movie was 10 years ago. The second best time is...
9 years ago?
Well, yeah, that would have been better, but I'm doing like...
8 years ago.
Also good, but I'm doing a play on that quote, you know, about planting trees, how the best time was 20 years ago, but the second best time is now.
Well, as you know, movies are trees, so I'm sold. So tell me about this thing.
Right, so on the planet Pandora, we're gonna meet this guy, Roland, and in the game, he's like this big, serious soldier guy.
We should get Kevin Hart to play him.
Oh, that's kind of the exact opposite vibe of what I said.
Yeah, then we could start the movie with a joke about his height.
Okay, that is good, and I can't believe nobody's done that before, but Roland's like the straight man in this movie.
Yeah, let's cast Kevin Hart as the serious character in a comedy action movie.
Well, okay then. So Roland kidnaps this girl, Tiny Tina, from a prison, and then this other prisoner, Krieg, smashes through his glass cell and joins them.
How is he even being held in a cell made of glass? Was that the first time he attempted that?
Hey, shut up. So then on this other planet, we're gonna meet Lilith, who's like a young, rebellious bounty hunter.
We should get Cate Blanchett to play her.
Oh, she's great. Isn't she in her 50s?
Yeah, great actress.
Yeah, okay. And then there's this other young scientist lady named Tanis.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
She's in her 60s, right?
Yes.
Okay, look, sir, I just gotta come out and say this. Is that a little miscast?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked. It's actually a little Mr. Cast. See, I gave him a little mustache and everything.
Very cute. And great actor choices, by the way.
Thank you.
Anyway, so Lilith gets hired by this guy, Atlas, to go rescue his daughter, Tina.
Okay.
So she goes to Pandora, where she was born, and meets this little robot, Claptrap.
And what's his deal?
Well, I was thinking that with this character, we set out to make one of the most beloved comedy actors of our time into just the most annoying thing on the planet.
Oh, sounds like a fun challenge.
Let's get Jack Black to say grating things every 2 to 3 seconds. Just stuff that barely has anything to do with anything.
That sounds perfect.
And let's make it all the comedic equivalent of saying, well, that just happened.
Amazing.
So they track down Tina, and turns out she doesn't want to be rescued, and now she's teamed up with Roland and Krieg as well.
Why is Roland protecting her?
He's a rogue mercenary soldier.
Yeah, why did he go rogue?
Because he's...
That stack of paper seems kinda thin.
Yeah, to be honest, I had one of those frickin' meet cutes on the way here.
What?
You know when you bump into a girl and your papers go flying everywhere and then you make eye contact as you're both getting up?
Did you forget to pick up all the papers?
I always forget to pick up a bunch of the papers after meet cutes.
Well, that's okay. We don't really need to know why the characters do what they do.
Okay, thank goodness.
So what happens now?
Okay, well now they've all decided to protect Tina and they're being pursued by Atlas's army led by this lady named Nox.
Okay.
So now we've got a fun team of outer space misfits. Just like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, that's always fun.
You see, the trick to a good Guardians of the Galaxy vibe is to make all the characters just kinda jerky.
And make sure they have good funny chemistry together, I guess.
Whoa, easy there. I can't do both those things.
Sorry.
You're trying to get me to walk and chew gum at the same time over here, and I won't stand for it.
I apologize. We'll just stick to one of those two things, whichever you think is the most important.
The unlikable one. So they're gonna do funny stuff, you know, they're gonna drive through a field of urine.
Pee fields are tight. So what are they trying to accomplish anyway?
Oh, well, see, there's this vault that contains powerful, it's stuff that makes you powerful.
Whoa.
But you need 3 keys to open it.
Oh, so they need to find 3 keys?
Well, they already have 1 key, and they just kind of stumble on another, and supposedly Tina is the 3rd key.
What do you mean?
There's this prophecy that the 3rd key is supposed to be the daughter of this ancient race from Pandora, and she's been genetically engineered to be that.
Oh, so Atlas wants to use her to become vaguely powerful.
Exactly. So the good guys need to make it to the vault before he can get into... Oh, they probably shouldn't be heading there.
That's fine.
So they're gonna encounter several obstacles along the way, which will happen legally making this a movie.
What kind of things?
They're gonna have to go through this sewer type area where maybe they'll fall in toxic waste or something.
Oh.
Yeah, you know how in video games sometimes you gotta go through an area? This is an area and they're gonna go through it.
Video game adapted.
And since guns are a huge thing in the game, there are gonna be several big gunfights.
Oh, tell me about those.
Well, picture this, sir. Shots of the characters firing bullets off screen and a shaky camera movement and then another shot of a character falling.
Well, I can only assume that the bad guys are being hit by those bullets.
Exactly. Although it will be hard to say, again, because of the shaky cam.
Very exciting.
Maybe.
So then what happens?
So eventually everybody gets to the vault, but turns out Tina's not the key. It's Lilith.
Oh.
Which is a big twist.
Oh.
Oh!
That's better. And then there's gonna be this moment where that lady Nox,
she switches sides.
How come?
I'm not sure, but she's killed instantly.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really affect anything in any way, but there are worse ways to spend 30 seconds of screen time.
I guess.
So now Lilith has to defend everybody from Atlas's army.
Is that gonna be hard to do? Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because see, since she's the chosen one, she now turns into a big old fire hawk and saves the day.
Isn't that the power she has in the game?
Yeah.
So fans of the game won't be surprised and non-fans of the game won't know what that's about?
Basically, yeah.
Who is this movie for?
Who is this movie for?
Sir, I'll tell you who this movie's for. This movie's for that little boy who's a fan of Borderlands, and he's always wondered why there's no movie. But he's not such a fan that he, like, knows all the stuff, because he'd get pretty mad about the weird decisions we're making. But he's aware, vaguely. He's got a vaguely positive feeling about Borderlands as a concept. And maybe... maybe that's enough to buy a ticket. That's who this movie's for.
Wow. Well said.
The thing is, I'm not sure that boy exists.
Well then we might be in some trouble here.
So. So, you have a Deadpool movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay, okay.
Oh, I feel like you're a little scared.
Well, you know, this is our first time diving into this crazy R-rated stuff like this.
Right.
So just, you know, be gentle.
You got it, sir. Don't worry. It's gonna be okay.
Okay, so you know how at the end of Logan he died that heroic death?
Yeah, beautiful ending, very emotional.
Well, at the start of this movie, Deadpool's gonna dig up his decomposed corpse and kill a bunch of guys with his bones.
Oh, my God.
Hey, you're okay. You're okay.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, in 2018, Deadpool uses the time travel device from Deadpool 2 to go to Earth 616 and meet with Happy Hogan and try to join the Avengers.
He's from several movies. Oh, boy, that's a very fun cameo.
Okay, if that's your reaction to that cameo, that's like, that's the tip of the cameo, Berg.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, one of the main audience reactions I'm going for with this movie is, hey.
That's the most satisfying way to say hey.
I agree.
So anyway, 6 years later, Deadpool is brought into the TVA by this guy Paradox, who tells him his timeline is dying because the anchor being Logan has died.
Anchor being?
Yeah, each timeline has one and can't keep going without it.
What about the millions of years before anchor beings are born? And if them dying kills a timeline, does that mean they're all supposed to be immortal? I have so many questions.
Hey, shut up about all of them. It's just a reason for Deadpool to go find a Wolverine.
Oh, okay.
So before Paradox Mercy kills his timeline, Deadpool grabs a tempad and goes to search for a replacement.
Oh, wow, wow, wow. Wow.
Yeah, so there's going to be a very fun multiverse montage. There's going to be a short Wolverine. There's going to be one played by Henry Cavill.
He's from Argyle.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Good cameo.
Listen, sir, are you going to react like this to every single cameo?
Yes.
Well, cameos are kind of one of the main things we do in this movie, so maybe I should just list them all for you, get it out of the way.
Oh, I don't know if I can handle that.
Chris Evans as Johnny Storm.
He's from the
I know. Then there's Wesley Snipes as Blade, Jennifer Garner as Elektra, Daphne Keen as X-23, we've got Channing Tatum as Gambit, Aaron Stanford as Pyro, Tyler Mane as Sabretooth, we've got Toad, we've got Juggernaut, we've got Nathan Fillion, Blake Lively, Matthew McConaughey. Sir?
Sir?
Is he gonna be okay?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? Is he in a coma?
I don't know.
Wait, do you think I'm a doctor?
Well,
dang it, I told my wife this white jacket she got me would make me look like a doctor. I'm just another producer guy.
Oh.
Well, can I keep pitching my movie to you?
Sure, let's go.
So anyway, I was telling the other producer guy the movie's gonna be a great vehicle for cameos.
And what were the cameos exactly?
I'm not going through that again. So anyway, Deadpool finds the worst Wolverine, and then the TVA sends them to this void filled with superhero cameos.
Okay.
And this Wolverine doesn't like Deadpool, so they're gonna fight a bunch.
Don't they both regenerate?
They do, yeah. So it's gonna be just a ton of stabbing with no stakes.
Sick!
And Deadpool's gonna crack a bunch of jokes about how Disney and Marvel isn't good anymore. Stuff's going so bad.
It's kind of hurtful.
And how multiverses just aren't very compelling.
Just to be clear, this is a multiverse movie, right?
Yeah, but if you point out the thing you're doing, that makes it okay for some reason. I'm breaking the fourth wall.
And I'm okay with it.
So anyway, now Deadpool and Wolverine need to get out of this cameo void to go save the timeline.
Okay.
So some bad cameos bring them and Johnny Storm to the leader of the void, Cassandra Nova.
And what's her deal?
Well, she's Charles Xavier's twin, so.
So.
Powerful mind, baldiful head.
Oh boy.
Yeah, but she's evil.
Why?
Because she's antagonistic.
Got it.
And she's gonna absolutely decimate Johnny Storm, rip his skin off, turn him to blood and bones.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I figure we continue the trend from Doctor Strange where a Fantastic Four character dies a horrible death.
Kind of a weird trend to develop, but okay.
So then Cassandra leaves Deadpool and Wolverine to be killed by Eliath, the big smoke monster from Loki.
She doesn't just kill them too?
No, because the movie's not done and they need to escape, so they escape.
Oh, well, good for them.
And then they're gonna meet up with Blade and Elektra and X-23 and Channing Tatum as Gambit.
Channing Tatum never played Gambit.
No, sir,
but he almost did. And let me tell you, people that paid attention to casting news in 2014 for films that were ultimately canceled are gonna love that cameo.
Pretty specific target you're aiming for there.
And I intend to hit it.
I imagine you will.
So Wolverine's gonna have a nice scene with X-23 and she's gonna make him feel better about all the X-Men dying in his timeline.
That's sweet.
Yeah, and that convinces him to be heroic, so they go confront Cassandra again.
Very exciting.
And they get her to open this big old Doctor Strange portal hole to go back to their timeline.
Strange holes are tight.
But now Cassandra decides she wants to destroy all timelines and just keep the void.
Why?
Because it's the time in the movie when we raise the stakes.
Oh, okay.
So she sends like 100 Deadpool cameos to fight them.
They're all Deadpool, so they all regenerate?
Well, there's one nice Deadpool that doesn't have that power, so he dies.
But other than that, this is a giant fight scene where none of the fighters can get hurt.
Yeah, there's no way they're not all gonna be okay, but it's gonna look very cool and be an entertaining way for an
audience to spend 3 to 4 minutes of their time, and there's nothing wrong with that.
You know what?
I guess you're right. So Cassandra wants to destroy all the timelines.
Yeah, but they find out that if they cut power to this time ripper machine, they can save the day, but it'll kill whoever does that.
Wow, so it's going to be impossible for both of them to survive till the end of the movie.
Actually, it's going to be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yes, it turns out it would kill one person, but they both use their bodies as conductors, and so they're okay.
Oh.
Yeah, the power of two.
Oh, that's got a nice ring to it. I'm going to mention that to the Star Wars team, see if that inspires them.
That sounds like it's going to be good.
So anyway, then there's a happy ending, and the whole movie's just kind of a love letter to the superhero movies that came before.
A love letter to what's come before. I like that.
Yeah, you know, a nice way to say goodbye to the past and let it go.
No, I don't like that part. I'm not gonna do that part.
What?
So, you've got a Spider-Man adjacent movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. I was thinking we'd make a Madam Web movie.
Oh, the word web sounds Spider-Man-y. I'm gonna greenlight this right away. So she's like a female Spider-Man?
No.
Oh.
But this movie is gonna have 3 girls that eventually become Spider-Women.
Oh, now we're talking.
Yeah. Well, they're normal the entire movie, but we will kind of see it once in a flash-forward vision thing.
That's enough for me to heavily lean on in the trailer.
A little misleading.
I believe the term is female-led, not misleading, and she can be any height, really.
Never mind.
So tell me about this Spider-Man movie. It's all, we're connected to it. We're a part of that.
Well, at the beginning of the movie, there's gonna be a heavily pregnant woman in the Amazon trying to find a spider that gives you superpowers.
How does she know it gives you powers?
By knowing it. But then when she finds it, the bad guy of the movie, Ezekiel, shoots her and steals it.
Oh, very mean. What's this bad guy's deal?
Well, he was in the Amazon with Madame Web's mom when she was researching spiders just before she died.
Oh, good sentence. I'm gonna put that almost verbatim in the trailer.
Thank you. So then these Peruvian spider people save the baby's life.
Another banger of a sentence.
So then like 30 years later, the baby Cassandra is grown up and working as an EMT in New York City.
How did the Peruvian Amazon spider people ship her back to New York City?
Amazon Prime, I don't care.
Okay.
And her EMT partner is Ben Parker.
That's the guy we're always killing.
Yeah.
Oh man, this movie's gonna be so Spider-Man adjacent. People are gonna love how much this almost involves Spider-Man.
Yeah, and so one day Cassie falls into some water and has a near-death experience.
Those can be fatal.
I mean, no, they're not. But anyway, Cassie develops the ability to see the future, kinda, sometimes.
Oh, she does.
And then one day she has a vision of another EMT dying in a car crash, so she tries to stop him, but he's like, okay, you're crazy, and he drives off anyway and dies.
Didn't she kind of cause that by slowing him down and making him leave later than he would have without her involvement?
Hey, shut up. So then one day she sees a vision of these 3 girls and Ezekiel is killing them in a subway.
Why does he want to kill them?
Because he's been having visions of them eventually getting powers and killing him, so he's got to kill them now before they destroy everything he's built.
What has he built?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't written any dialogue for this guy. I figure we just shoot the movie and then I'll figure out something after and we'll just re-record every single one of his lines in ADR.
Won't those not match the actor's lips?
Listen, sir, I don't know how any of this works. So anyway, then Cassie saves the girls.
I don't know about this.
Ezekiel has a Spider-Man looking suit you could put in the trailer.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So Cassie steals a taxi and brings these 3 girls to the woods in New Jersey, but she hears on the radio that she's now wanted for kidnapping.
Uh-oh.
And she's like, oh, I don't want to be doing this. I hate helping people.
Why did she become an EMT?
Unclear. So then one of the girls mentions that Ezekiel crawled on the ceiling like a spider, so Cassie's like, oh, okay, you 3 girls stay in these woods. I'm gonna go look at some papers for 3 hours.
What?
Well, see, Ezekiel has access to surveillance cameras all over the place, so the forest really is the safest place for little girls.
I just say that like that.
Anyway, they decide to walk to a nearby diner and dance on some tables.
So they're not traumatized by almost being murdered by a spider person?
No, they want to eat food and flirt with teenage boys.
Well, okay then.
But then somebody in the diner is reading a newspaper with an article about the kidnapping, so he calls the cops.
A newspaper article about a thing that just happened a couple of hours ago in a different state.
Yes, and so then Ezekiel tracks them down.
Uh-oh.
But Cassie has a little vision about this, so she hits him with the stolen taxi.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And then she's going to teach the three girls CPR, because that's going to come into play later. It's like Chekhov's CPR class.
Hey, you're doing some three shadowing.
Isn't it foreshadowing? It's not up to that level, I don't think, no.
That's fair. Anyway, now Cassie has to go to Peru for a dump.
Kind of a long way to go for a bathroom break.
No, it's an exposition dump.
Like she does it on a canvas?
No, she tracks down the spot in the Amazon where her mom died and meets with a dude who was there and gets all the information we in the audience already have.
Oh, okay. How does she find the exact spot?
She had a Polaroid picture of a tree.
Okay, that's basically coordinates.
So she has a vision about her mom, and now she's not mad at her about researching spiders anymore.
Wait, isn't she wanted for kidnapping? How'd she drive a stolen taxi to the airport and get on a plane to Peru?
Well, I mean, airport security was a lot more lax in 2003.
Well, you know, that's famously untrue.
Well,
and how did Ezekiel not track her on all the cameras?
Reasons. Anyway, while she was gone, she left the girls with Ben Parker and his very pregnant sister-in-law, Mary Parker.
She's pregnant with the whole reason we're making these movies.
She sure is, but then Mary goes into very premature labor, so they all have to go to the hospital, including the girls.
I mean, why do the girls need to go too?
So the rest of the movie can happen.
Okay.
So Cassie gets back from Peru and has to go help the girls with her stolen cab.
Wow, well, I mean, this guy's basically evil Spider-Man, and she could just kind of see the future a little bit sometime. It's gonna be tough to fight him.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, see, now she steals an ambulance and crashes that through a wall into him.
So her powers are seeing the future and then also Grand Theft Auto.
And attempted vehicular homicide with said thefted auto, yep.
Very cool. Didn't somebody probably need that ambulance, though?
I don't care, so then there's gonna be a big final fight.
None of the characters are capable of fighting him, though, right?
That is correct,
and there are no more stolen cars in play, so they lure him into a firework factory and set it all up to explode.
I saw that in a cartoon once.
Same here.
So Cassie uses her vision powers to help them dodge Ezekiel's attacks, and then also she can be in multiple places at once now.
Oh, she can?
Yeah, the guy back in the jungle told her, when you take on responsibility, great power will come.
Oh, that's kind of like the famous line.
Yeah, exactly, but not as good. And that unlocked powers for some reason.
Sick.
And then I figured this is the perfect opportunity for some product placement for your partner, Pepsi.
What, in the middle of a weird firework fight?
Yeah, see, I figure a giant neon Pepsi sign falls on the bad guy and he dies.
Oh!
Just a giant S falling on him, a giant P.
Getting a giant P on you is tight.
And so that's the end of the voiceover, bad guy. But then Cassie falls into some water and gets a firework in the face.
Oh!
So it's time for the girls to do some CPR and save her life.
Oh, from the two shadowing.
Yeah, now she's totally fine, except she's blind and in a wheelchair forever.
What, from a firework?
Yeah, but she's perfectly happy. She cracks a little joke about Ben thinking that being an uncle is like all fun and no responsibility, but she knows what's coming.
She knows that he and Peter's parents are gonna die, and instead of saving them, she's joking about it.
Yeah, really funny stuff. And then we're also gonna tease a future where Madam Web and those three spider women fight crime together or something.
Yeah, how are they gonna get powers?
Unclear, but won't it be fun to see them all in a future movie together?
Maybe. I don't know these people.
Very fun. So what do you think?
Hey, listen, you plop some Spider-Man related stuff onto film and you've got yourself a movie, I think. I don't really know what superhero fans like.
Let's hope it's this.
Hi everybody, Ryan George here. Thank you for watching that pitch meeting. I hope you enjoyed it. I have a few seconds to fill up here and nothing planned, so I'm gonna attempt some improv. How? Yes, and...